Blog Talk Radio.
Diabetes Late Night, Glam More, Fear Less. Welcome you to my annual trip to the gynecologist. I'm your host, Mr. Diva Bedick, and tonight we're talking about women's health issues and diabetes, including premenstrual dysphoric disorder, polycystic ovary syndrome, along with a healthy summer skin tips on this 1 hour of wellness with a wow, featuring the music of PM Dawn's live album, courtesy of Sony Music. Actually, we're going to extend the show tonight to take all of your calls in celebration of our 6th anniversary of podcasting. So if you want to call in tonight, you can at 347-215-8551. Now, the song at the top of the hour I played was PM Dawn's breakout hit, Set Adrift on Memory Bliss, which features a sample of Spandau Ballet's True. But what you probably don't know is that one of the founding members of PM Dawn, Prince B, lived with diabetes for more than 2 decades and developed various health complications. He suffered multiple strokes, a lower leg amputation, and renal kidney disease before dying this past June at the age of 46. The goal of this podcast, as well as our over 100 free podcasts, is to help you improve your attitude about living well with diabetes so you can keep your house at home by learning how to prevent a diabetes health-related complication from occurring. Hopefully the conversations you hear over the next hour and a half will inspire you to manage your diabetes self-care with a new attitude. Tonight's guests include Dr. Andrea Chisholm, Peak 10 Skincare founder Connie Elder, We Are Diabetes founder Asha Brown, and Laura from our Diabetic Facebook community. Plus, one of our lucky listeners tonight might be an instant winner when we play our newest game at the midway point of this show. Before we get things started, let's take a minute and donate to Diabetic at diabetic.org. Your tax-deductible contributions are greatly appreciated. We're going to hear another song by PM Dawn that was featured on the Boomerang soundtrack from 1992. It spent 16 weeks on the Billboard Hot 100. Here's I Would Die Without You from PM Dawn, courtesy of... Back to Diabetes Late Night. I'm your host, Mr. Diva Bedick, and tonight we're celebrating our 6-year anniversary podcasting by going to the gynecologist.
Ooh la la.
to talk about diabetes. Now, if you're scratching your head wondering why am I going to the gynecologist, I can't even say it, that's how nervous I am. Why am I going back to the gynecologist? I've worked with Dr. Andrea a few times on podcasts over the last year. Let me tell you why. First of all, I'm a man going to the gynecologist, which I think gives me freedom to ask all those silly, embarrassing questions that some women are afraid to ask. So stay tuned. I might be asking one of yours. And secondly, I've been presenting diabetes outreach to primarily women for the past 11 years. And I have met over 100,000 of women, I think, or reached out to them through social media and the various live events I do. And during that time, I have to say I'm acutely aware of the fact that women's hormones play havoc with their blood sugars. And unfortunately, I don't think it gets enough media coverage or enough dialogue in our community. So I hope if you're listening tonight, whether you're a man or a woman, you'll stay tuned and get some information that may help yourself or someone you love manage their diabetes a little bit better and maybe give them a little bit more peace of mind. Of course, it's important to do all of that with a little sparkle. So our good friend Connie Elder, who just started Peak 10 Skincare, is going to come in a little bit earlier and show us, talk to us a little bit about healthy skincare tips. So I'm thinking this hour is going to be a lot of fun. And more than anything, it's a pleasure to always talk with my first guest, Dr. Andrea Chisholm, who helps me so much take on these issues related to women with diabetes. Hello, Dr. Andrea.
Hey, Max.
How are you tonight?
I'm great. And
you
congratulations
know,
on the anniversary.
Thank you so much. And you and I had the great pleasure and privilege for me to work together last year. And when we were thinking about coming back this summer with some more shows focused on women's health issues, one of the issues you really wanted to bring attention to was premenstrual dysphoric disorder.
Mm-hmm.
And tell our audience a little bit more about that. And then I reached out to our Facebook community, Dr. Andrea, and I have some questions from the divas a little bit later on. But first, this is an important issue for women. Tell us a little bit about what it is and what women should know in our community about it.
Yeah, so, you know, just women in general should definitely be aware of PMS and PMDD. PMDD is premenstrual dysphoria disorder, and there's a bit of a restructuring going on, and so it's understandably if people are a little bit confused or what is PMS or severe PMS and what is PMDD. But the really important piece, and we've sort of struggled a little bit to figure out who owns this diagnosis. Is it the psychiatric community? Is it a psychiatric diagnosis, or is it a gynecologic diagnosis? And what we're really starting to appreciate is that it's a hormonal mediated mood disorder, and that's the key piece. And you know, most women will have some premenstrual symptoms, but when those become severe, and then certainly when they take on a huge piece of a mood component, anxiety, depression, that's really seriously impacting a woman's functioning in her day-to-day life, really for just the week or two before her period, with symptoms improving during her period, and then getting better and having at least one symptom-free week, a month, that sort of cyclic mood issue really needs to be looked at as something that is not normal and is a menstrual disorder, and that is being caused by your hormones and how they change normally.
Can I ask you a question, though? Because it seems to me that a lot of society just, you know, writes off women with their menstrual cycles in general by saying, oh, she's on the rag or she's having her period if they seem moody at all. So
yep.
I would assume that if that's a general reaction to normal PMS symptoms, that no one would really even know where to begin with this PMDD symptom.
Yeah.
So would it be confusing? I mean, it seems like it would be confusing. So how would a woman kind of even begin to self-diagnose herself around something like that?
Well, you know, the key to diagnosis is there's no test that can be done. I mean, that's the one of the big problems. But the key to diagnosis is doing a prospective symptom diary for yourself and collecting and writing down your symptoms based really on calendar days about how you feel over the course of the month, and it's looking for a cyclic nature to this. The unfortunate thing is women, because of this thought that, oh, she's just hormonal, she's just hysterical, because of that stereotype, or also just in general, not really physicians, unfortunately, not really listening to patients well, a lot of women get misdiagnosed with mood disorders, and unfortunately get started on some really strong medications that are typically used for people who have bipolar disorder. So women end up getting tremendously over-medicated and misdiagnosed, and it's really unfortunate because the approaches to management are very difficult, and I feel for women because it is hard to find physicians sometimes that are really willing to listen to their symptoms. So women do have to advocate for themselves.
So how do they treat it? How do they treat it? Do they you were just saying, like, some of these mental health medications, are those successful for women? Or it seems like, you know, especially for our audience, which is women with at risk or affected by diabetes, that would just be one more medication on top of more medication. I don't know.
Yeah. So the interesting thing to look at is because this is cyclic. What we do know is that, you know, some women are just more sensitive than others. The changing nature of your hormones in an ovulating woman, which is a normal process that happens, when those hormone levels change, they can trigger chemical imbalances and sensitivities in the brain. And we know that there's interaction with estrogen and progesterone and some of the stimulating hormones interacting with the serotonergic system and the GABAergic system. And those are systems in the brain that help mediate mood and sort of your general sense of well-being. And if there's dysregulation there or imbalances, that can cause depressed mood, it can cause anxiety, it can cause agitation. So one of the keys, if you have an underlying organic mood disorder like bipolar disorder, you might have flares and exacerbations related to your hormonal cycle, but you're not going to ever really have a symptom-free week per se. But when you have a hormonal-based mood disorder, you are going to feel well when your own hormones are balanced. So the way of treating it, sort of the first-line treatment, is to work on stabilizing and not allowing for those tremendous hormonal changes to happen. That's sort of treating it at the cause. Some women will sort of treat it at the second level, which is actually treat that brain chemistry imbalance that happens. And so some people will do well on the serotonin reuptake inhibitors or the SSRIs, but definitely not the mood stabilizers. You know, a mood stabilizer has no place in the treatment of PMDD if that patient does not have an underlying mood disorder.
Okay, so let's just back up a little bit from that for a minute and talk about PMS symptoms, because mm-hmm. I know like 85% of all women may experience PMS symptoms,
yep.
but only
yep.
with regard to the PMDD, I think it impacts 3 to 8% of women with that. So my first question, I talked to my mom earlier today, she never really experienced PMS. She had like mild issues with it. So
yep.
as her, well, I'm her son, but if I were her daughter, is the way my mother experienced PMS passed down to me, or is it nature or is it nurture? Like, would I be able to, would my PMS symptoms be different than my mother's and my grandmother's?
You know, typically, I'm not going to be able to, you know, absolutely factually answer that question, but typically there does tend to be some familial tendencies with how you do with your PMS. So there can be some genetic component to it. And, you know, like I said, because of the hormonal changes, and this is what we're going to, when we start to talk a little bit more about how your menstrual cycle affects your diabetes, it's that luteal phase that is really crucial, and that's the 2 weeks after ovulation, and that's where the hormonal changes happen, where the predominant hormone at that time is progesterone, and progesterone sort of being understood as the culprit for a lot of the physical symptoms of PMS that we feel, a little bit of the water retention, the bloating, a little bit of the aches and pains, the fatigue, all of those things are caused by progesterone levels. And then,
so how does your menstrual cycle affect your diabetes?
So,
or can it affect
how
it?
Can it? I mean, it can affect it in many ways. There's a very intimate relationship between in some women between insulin and insulin-like hormone and progesterone levels, but all women with diabetes will have some challenge to their glycemic control, again, in that luteal phase of their cycle. So, you have your period, and that's actually the first day of your new cycle. Most women will typically ovulate about 2 weeks later, and then they have ovulation. At that time of ovulation, the hormones change so that there's more progesterone produced, and that's the luteal phase. And that's sort of that's the time we all know where, you can start to have some problems with acne and the bloating and the irritability and the fatigue. And then I would argue, I'm sure most of your listeners will notice that they have had some challenge with their glycemic control in that phase of their cycle. Where they may be, it may be subtle, and the evidence has shown that it's a subtle change, but there definitely is some fluctuation and some increased insulin resistance as caused by the progesterone levels.
Great advice and great information. Well, coming up, we're going to be answering some of the questions our listeners had for Dr. Andrea, but first we're going to hear another cut from PM Dawn from Paper Dolls, courtesy of Sony Music.
Paper Dolls.
I'm your host, Mr. David Bedick, and you're listening to tonight's podcast on women's issues and diabetes. Later on the show, my good friend and fellow diabetes advocate, Asha Brown, is going to share her journey of dealing with PCOS and type 1 diabetes. But first, we're going to take some of the questions that our Diva Bedick community sent to Dr. Andrea Chisholm over the past 2 weeks in preparation for the show. Dr. Andrea, are you ready for your first question?
I'm ready, Max.
How common is it for women to get yeast infections with diabetes? What does it mean, and how do I treat it?
Okay. It's interesting because part of the workup, if we have a woman who comes into us with recurrent yeast infections, is to look and see if they're potentially undiagnosed diabetic. It has to do with yeast. Yeast loves, you think about when you make bread, right? You use the yeast and you add a little bit of sugar to it, and then the yeast grows, and that's essentially what's happening in your vagina. Increased, poor control, so increased glucose levels in your bloodstream, increased glucose levels in your bodily secretions, your vaginal secretions, create sort of a perfect storm environment in that dark, warm, moist area of the vagina. Hence, yeast will tend to grow more. I mean, clearly, obviously, improving glycemic control would be up there on the list of things to do. Treatment, there's over-the-counter yeast medications. There's prescription-based antifungals that you could be prescribed by your gynecologist, and there's an oral antifungal that can be used. Oftentimes adding a supplement of a lactobacilli supplement. Lactobacilli is the bacteria that lives in your vagina that sort of maintains a nice, healthy pH in the vagina. That pH is what's being changed also by the elevated glucose. Adding some lactobacilli can help as well to maintain a healthy environment and to prevent yeast infections. Sometimes you may end up with recurrent chronic yeast infections, and that obviously, you know, you would be, you know, seeking care from your gynecologist, and they, your gynecologist may recommend some long-standing antifungal treatments for you.
How about cranberry juice? Because it seems to me like everyone always talks about having cranberry juice, and when I look at the back of a cranberry juice cocktail, I know it's packed with sugar as well as carbohydrates. So it
yeah.
seems to me it would be completely the wrong thing to be having, and yet I know a lot of women do drink it as a way, as a prevention or something.
So cranberry juice actually is, and I agree with you, for all of the sugar, the cranberry cocktail, I think it would be tough to probably just take an unsweetened cranberry juice. That would be a little rough. But it's the cranberry juice is for urinary tract infection prevention, not for yeast infection. And it's actually pretty interesting because the cranberry is so acidic, the acid concentrates in your urine, and decreasing the pH or increasing the acidity of your urine, actually there's many bacteria that can't live in that sort of an environment. So it actually works as almost like an antibacterial agent in your bladder. So for women with recurrent urinary tract infections, cranberry juice would be warranted, but not for recurrent vaginal yeast infections.
Okay. All right. Next question. Are early menopause symptoms related to diabetes?
Specifically, yes, and specifically women with type 1 diabetes. We know that women who are living with type 1 diabetes and I should say sort of the, and I excuse me if I'm misspeaking to your community, but sort of what I've sort of been trained as a juvenile, so the younger onset type 1 diabetes, so insulin-dependent pancreatic cell destruction diabetes. Those women, because that is a, you know, thought to be a more of an autoimmune picture, we do see those women actually often have later first periods and earlier progression to menopause.
And how early are we talking?
You know, I don't have a specific age, but I can say that the average age of menopause is about 52. That's right under the bell curve. So there's women that go earlier and later. Any time after the age of 40 is considered within the normal range to become menopausal. You know, premature ovarian failure, which is more common in women with other, you know, also with underlying autoimmune issues, is becoming menopausal before age 40. It's not an absolute, right? Women with early diagnosed insulin-dependent diabetes, or, you know, sort of the classic type 1 diabetes, are it doesn't mean that they're going to have early menopause, but it is potentially more likely for them.
Okay, and here's a random question for the people who read People magazine like I do. So last week I was at BB King's and Sheena Easton was performing Morning Train, Sugar Walls, Strut. Well, Sugar Walls would have been a great song for tonight. But anyhow, she admitted she's 57, and she's experiencing hot flashes. And everyone who was around me said, that's not possible. She's too old for hot flashes.
Oh, absolutely not. Absolutely not.
Okay.
You know, like,
well,
I said, it's a bell curve.
For your eyes only,
curve.
If Gina's listening, I was supporting her. I was alone in that, Dr. Andrea, but I needed
and
to
some
clarify.
Women, and women will, you know, go through menopause and have hot flashes, and some women will have hot flashes, you know, maybe not as intensely, but will still have hot flashes throughout their menopausal years.
Wow, that's not something to look forward to, but hey, that's great advice. Now, final question before we move on. Do oral birth control methods affect my blood sugars?
Yes. same way that the progesterone levels, the cyclical progesterone levels do. Any form of contraception, because of what we call exogenous or out-of-your-body progesterone levels, so in the oral birth control pill, in the progesterone only, in the implants, in the Mirena IUD, the progesterone IUD, even in the injectable progesterone or Depo-Provera, all of those progesterone levels will subtly, potentially, increase your insulin resistance. So yes, they may affect your glycemic control. You may see a change, and you may have to adjust your management.
Okay, so coming up, we're going to be talking to Asha Brown about her journey with PCOS and type 1 diabetes. Before we do, can you explain what PCOS is to our listeners, Dr. Andrea?
Sure. PCOS stands for polycystic ovarian syndrome. And PCOS is essentially a hormonal production imbalance in your ovary. And women who have PCOS, the structure of their ovaries is a little bit more, the ovary has essentially, we can look at it as having two parts. It has the follicles, which release the eggs, and that's predominated by estrogen. And it has a supporting tissue, or the luteinized tissue, which is what produces progesterone. In women who have PCOS, it's as if their ovaries have a little bit more of the supportive tissue, and there's a predominant production of progesterone and progesterone precursors versus the relative to the estrogen. So what ends up happening, that subtle hormonal imbalance does not allow you to ovulate every month. So you have what we call anovulatory cycles. If you don't ovulate and you don't release an egg and you don't have ovulation, you don't have a period. But you will have sort of this subtle low-grade production of estrogen and progesterone going along. So it's not uncommon for women with PCOS to have irregular periods, and then when they do have their period, to have heavier bleeding or breakthrough bleeding. There's also, and we don't quite understand the exact relationship, but there's a definite relationship between this progesterone imbalance and insulin-like growth factor, which then adds a component of insulin resistance to PCOS. And in women who have PCOS, they will often manifest with insulin resistance that may and often eventually does become overt diabetes. To add insult to injury, because of these metabolic changes, a lot of women with PCOS have a very, very, very hard time losing weight and a very easy time gaining weight, and are very sensitive to carbohydrates. They have a propensity that imbalance causes their body to like immediately store fat rather than active utilization of the energy. And
does
there's a lot more that I can say.
Does this only happen in younger women? I'm sorry to interrupt. Does this only happen in younger women?
It doesn't happen only in younger women, but that's where it starts. So I guess yes, it does. Oftentimes become apparent in late teens, early 20s, but some women won't be diagnosed until they're in their 30s.
Okay, so, I mean, Asha, we're going to bring in Asha Brown in a minute, but I'm just curious before we do. So you're saying it, I mean, research is saying that it is linked to insulin production. So how would a woman with type 1 diabetes whose pancreas does not make insulin have PCOS?
So There's a relationship there, but it's not a definite cause and effect, right? I mean, if she in a woman, so like in Asher's case, if she has type one diabetes, she certainly can still have the progesterone imbalance in her ovaries. That doesn't necessarily mean that she then she can have the underlying, potentially have the metabolic insulin resistance as well. Like, they're not mutually exclusive. PCOS is an ovarian issue that then influences glycemic control.
Well, she's got a fascinating story, so we're going to hear about
that. I'm sure.
That.
I can't wait to hear her story.
I know. Well, guess what? First, we're going to have to play. I know Ash is probably chomping, ready to get on the show, but Ash, and we're going to play another song by Prince B. He suffered unfortunately, a massive stroke in 2005 that left him paralyzed on the left side of his body. But he was undeterred because PM Dawn went on to appear on NBC's Hit Me Baby One More Time, performing Set Adrift on Memory Bliss. They actually won the grand prize, everybody, outperforming the other one-hit wonders. And they donated their proceeds to the JDRF. Here's another song from PM Dawn's greatest hits, courtesy of Sony Music.
Whatever it is I do, I try to think about you.
I have a love for you, but nothing hides.
Whatever it is I do, I'm always thinking of you.
I hope you look at me through patience.
I'm your host, Mr. Diva Bedick. Thanks for tuning in tonight and helping us celebrate our 6th anniversary year of podcasting. It's time to meet an amazing diabetes advocate who founded the organization We Are Diabetes. That's wearediabetes.org, primarily devoted to promoting support and awareness for type 1 diabetics who suffer from eating disorders. Tonight she's going to share for the very first time her 8-month journey health crisis from hell, as she called it, of dealing with PCOS and type 1 diabetes. Please welcome to the show, Asha Brown. Hi, Asha.
Hi, Max. Thanks so much for having me tonight.
Thanks for being on the show. We love having you here. You know, I was so captivated by all your Facebook posts over, I think it was like earlier this spring, you were really posting about this subject. And before we even start this interview, I just want to thank you on behalf of the diabetes community for your openness, because your openness and willing to talk about this issue as well as eating disorders, I think, is really changing attitudes in men and women living with diabetes and really helping us elevate the conversation. So thank you so much for everything you do.
Oh, thank you. It's my pleasure.
Okay, so tell us a little bit about your journey with these diagnoses, and I know you've lived with a handful of diagnoses, so you might want to kind of backtrack and tell us everything before you
sure.
get into
tell you my life story. Well, I'm good at compiling it all in a concise manner. So I was diagnosed with type 1, the autoimmune version, when I was 5 years old, and then about 4 years after that, I got Hashimoto's. So I was about 9 years old at the time when I had a thyroid imbalance. And by the age of 16, I was diagnosed with a severe case of PCOS. What's interesting is that I'm so glad we had the explanation of the common version of PCOS just now, because my symptoms and my case presents a very different type. And I've met a number of women who are not presenting the common symptoms associated with PCOS. There can be the common assumption is that these women are heavy, that they have facial hair, and many of them do, and it's awful. I mean, it's a horrible thing to struggle with, and some of them have very high testosterone levels, but I didn't have any of those things. I did, however, have a body that never really grew right because the hormones never had a chance because I was growing up with autoimmune disease. When I was about 15 years old, I woke up in the middle of the night with the worst pain of my entire life, still to this day. It felt like a monster was crawling out of my stomach. And I crawled into my parents' room screaming, and we went to the emergency room, and they gave me some Dilaudid. And after a lot of scans and tests, finally had an ultrasound, and it was revealed that I, even at such a young age, had a lot, I will just say, of benign cysts on my ovaries. Which was preventing me from starting my period and probably preventing a whole bunch of other issues, a lot of hormonal imbalances, obviously. So that was when I found out that I had it. And then I had an eating disorder for a decade. So I ignored my PCOS care. I never menstruated regularly. I actually didn't start having my period until I was 21 years old. And then, just as it was explained before, it came very infrequently, and when it did, it was severe. It was very long and very painful. I was diagnosed with PMDD, actually, at the age of 22, as well as PMS, severe PMS. So my journey with my OBGYN region has not been a good one. When I found recovery, I balanced out my mental state and my physical state. And I had an OBGYN who helped me. We found a continuous birth control method that was keeping everything balanced. So I wasn't having cysts rupture, and my insulin resistance was under control. However, I had some bad advice from this same OBGYN last year to go off this birth control method to, quote-unquote, give my body a break. And I was very dubious. I did not like this idea, so I kind of argued about it. But I liked rules. I like to follow my doctor's advice. So I did it with hesitation. And then, I guess, to put it mildly, the gates of hell just opened up. I actually had a severely heavy menstrual cycle for 8 months straight. I became anemic. My blood sugars were so extremely wild that I was crashing. I was just a diabetes roller coaster. But even more so, my hormones were so nuts that I barely knew who I was. My husband certainly didn't want to be around me. It was really traumatic. Unfortunately, the care that I got from this OBGYN, who has now been fired, and I found a new specialist who is very smart and very adept at treating PCOS cases. Unfortunately, she thought the best line of treatment was to triple my dose of hormones. So I was put on two levels higher of estrogen and progesterone, which was a very large amount and really hurt my body, hurt my thyroid, just hurt me. And then she also gave me the Depo-Provera shot. So I had three levels in two different forms of really strong, powerful hormones that we just learned about, pushed into my body for 8 months straight. It didn't stop the bleeding, but it actually made my mental state worse.
Of course.
And caused a lot of side effects. So I've never had to endure such a long health crisis before, and we finally had to schedule surgery. I was at this point too weak to be able to endure a hysterectomy, which is something we're looking at for a future option, because I can't trust pills to keep this stable forever. But I did have a D&C. It was very successful. We got the bleeding stopped, and I went back on the birth control brand, the continuous birth control method that worked for about 5 or 6 years very well. So I'm not back on that, and I'm feeling like myself again, and I'm just relieved. But what I learned is that PCOS, when it's managed, it's an annoying thing, but you can find balance with it, and you can maintain a healthy weight, and you can maintain a healthy mental state. When it is not balanced, though, it can affect every part of your life, just like type 1 diabetes.
So, Dr. Andrea, I mean, that's a lot of story, and thank you, Asha, for sharing it. I'd love to get your comments
sure.
and also get a little bit of your advice about the whole what Asha mentioned about controlling PCOS through birth control.
Yeah. So, Asha, first of all, you know, I want to say, I'm sorry you had to go through all of that.
Thank you.
But thank you for sharing. Thank you very much for sharing the story. And you do bring up a really good point that true. There's like sort of the classic typical PCOS, but there is this variant where you don't have to have the testosterone. There's sort of the real excess progesterone that kind of flips over to testosterone, where you have increased acne and
right.
and hair growth and the obesity and all of that. That there's a variation of women who are very thin and don't have those androgen symptoms, but still definitely have, like you said, the cyst production and the irregular
right.
cycles and the bleeding and all of that. So thank you for bringing that piece up as well. So,
sure.
you know, for women out there who are listening who have some of these menstrual irregularities, hearing about the other description, thinking that maybe they don't have PCOS, is very likely that you could for sure have PCOS.
Right.
It's interesting. I think we're finding, a lot of we're starting to have, and this is a little bit off topic, so I apologize quickly, but we're trying to really figure out what the underlying etiology is and what causes PCOS and these hormone imbalances in women. And there is some thought to think that there's some play with environmental exposures and like the estrogen disrupting chemicals that, you know, things that are found in pesticides and even in some of the beauty products that, you know, our generation, our parents have been exposed to. And
oh,
there's
wow.
some thought that in utero exposure to some of these things might actually be leading to some, you know, hormonal imbalances in young women. So it's going to be interesting, I think, in the next several years when we sort of start to understand more of that to help maybe explain some of these problems that we're seeing. But yeah, I mean, typically the management of PCOS is to start you on an oral contraceptive, and I'm horrified actually that your GYN recommended a break for you because there really is no reason.
I mean,
there really is no reason, and there really is no reason to take a break from oral contraceptive use, even if you're just using it for contraceptive reasons, because the duration of use doesn't cause any problems for you. So, and certainly if you're on it for PCOS, it's really important to stay on it. But you know, the way the oral contraceptive works is that it's protective on the one hand because it suppresses the cyst production and keeps the lining of the uterus thin, so there's not this great buildup. So it's protective
right.
for the uterus and protective for the ovaries. And for women with PCOS who then also have the excess progesterone that starts to act like testosterone, and they have the there's a conversion that happens, and so they have the hair growth and the acne. For those women, being on the oral contraceptive with the estrogen component, it increases a hormone that binds out that stuff, so it helps improve those other symptoms. But it's essential because women who have PCOS are at an increased risk because of the anovulation for developing uterine cancer and ovarian cancer in their lifetime.
All right, so wait, I have a question for both you, Dr. Andrea, and you, Asha. First, Dr. Andrea, what about women with PCOS who want to get pregnant?
Mm-hmm.
Are
yep.
they able to? I mean, if, like Asha just said, going off of it kind of, I'm sorry to say this, sent her off the rails. So, I mean, is that not an option for a woman with PCOS, since you're saying that one of the ways they treat it is with birth control?
Yeah, so it definitely is an option, and Asher, I think you do know, and you appreciate that you are a bit of an extreme, yeah. In the
that's just kind of the story of my life, the way I was raised and born.
But typically with PCOS, and I have for sure seen women sort of suffer not to the degree that you had, but certainly have, you know, some real significant pain and painful cycles when they go off the oral contraceptive. But in general, women with sort of like, I'll call it, for lack of a better way to describe it, kind of like run-of-the-mill PCOS. these women, I will sort of tell them, you know, hey, this is actually one of the easiest fertility issues to overcome, because, you know, what's happening is that you're not ovulating. So it's unlikely that you'll become pregnant without some sort of medical intervention, but with just sort of the oral ovulation-inducing medications, things like something called Clomid or Letrozole, we're usually fairly able to help women who have PCOS actually get pregnant. And there's actually also, oftentimes we'll add metformin to women with PCOS who have a little bit of early, especially if they have a bit of the insulin resistance or a little bit more of the metabolic piece of the obesity and whatnot, that that actually will help regulate, because of that sort of mysterious interaction between insulin and progesterone, that actually will help regulate cycles and actually improve their ovulation status and ability to get pregnant.
Great. All right. So, Ash, I have a question for you, but before I ask you the question, I just want to tell our callers, you're welcome to call in at 347-215-8551. You could ask We Are Diabetes founder Asha Brown a question, or Dr. Andrea, who's our guest tonight, along with our skin care expert, Connie Elder, who's coming up. Plus, the woman behind the Well-Armed Diabetic Checklist will be playing our game. Laura Laria will be on. So you could ask any of these fabulous women or myself a question tonight at 347-215-8551. My pink phone's ringing. Asha, it's actually a call from me for you. You heard me at the top of the hour talking a little bit about how society deals with women when they're quote-unquote on the rag. So I know from reading your posts on Facebook that you have a very understanding, wonderful husband. I'm just wondering, how did people react to some of the experience you were going through? Like, did you find that people were comforting, or did you think people were blowing you off? Did people think it was just all in your head? You know, what was the overall reaction to some of the struggle you were going through?
You know, what's interesting is that my friends and my large, wonderful tribe of DOC advocates, you know, people who just give me strength every day, the other members of the diabetes online community, they were overly, just the most supportive people ever. And it really reminds me why I live the life I live now. I live it openly. I share what I go through because I have now this network of people who may not be able to relate to anything specific, but they have their own body struggles, autoimmune issues, and so I had a lot of support from my friends and my family, and I don't really understand why my husband is so wonderful. It's a little scary, actually, what a good person he is. Obviously, he got frustrated, and there were extra fights in the last 8 or 9 months, but he was so patient, and he did reading too, and then he came with me to all of my OBGYN appointments, and he saw the dismissal that I received initially from my OBGYN that I had been seeing for a while, and I no longer see her. She'd been fired. So he was able to observe the dismissal of my symptoms that I missed probably about 2 months total of work. In the first 8 months, I couldn't drive on some mornings. I just couldn't lift my legs. I was so weak. And sometimes my blood sugars were crashing so low, we just didn't know what to do. So the fact that nothing was addressed quickly, and then when it was addressed, it was just drugs versus talking about other less options that don't affect my other chronic conditions so severely. He saw it. And so, unfortunately, the dismissal and the poor reactions came from the medical community for the most part, and the positive support and reactions came from the people who know me best.
Well, that's interesting because, Dr. Andrea, I saw that the Atlantic website posted an article by Rob Fraisler, this reporter who posted an article about how doctors take women's pain less seriously than men's pain. Mm-hmm. And so apparently it's called the Yentl syndrome, where most doctors were generalizing, minimize, mock, or coax women into silence who are suffering pain. And there was even a survey nationwide that men wait an average of 49 minutes before receiving acute abdominal pain help, and women have to wait an average of 65 minutes for the same treatment.
Hmm.
Any thoughts on that?
That's just, I'm speechless comments. I mean, I hate to sort of, you know, I hate to hear that, it's definitely, I mean, it's definitely a reality, and I really hate to hear that my fellow gynecologists are dismissive, you know.
No, I could understand that. I always appreciate your honesty, and I always appreciate that I could bring information like that to you, because I think you are definitely a friendly healthcare provider, and unfortunately that's an exception, but fortunately for all of us, you're in our community and we appreciate that. So we're going to lighten the mood in a minute and play some games and meet our next two guests. So let's take a minute, think about what I just said, and we'll hear another song by PM Dawn, courtesy of Sony Music.
So dry your tears, baby.
host, Mr. Divabedic. I'm the game show host of the diabetes community, or so they say on my Facebook page. Coming up, we're going to meet Peak 10 Skincare founder Connie Elder, who's going to give our lucky winner a chance to win some amazing sunscreen products. Let's meet that lucky listener tonight. She's a co-creator of the Well-Armed Diabetic Checklist and a good friend of ours. She did that with our good friend Judith Jones Ambrosini. This is a list that everyone with diabetes should have on hand in case they're dealing with danger, crisis, fire, evacuation, or natural disaster. Please welcome to the show Laura Laria. Hi, Laura.
Good evening, everyone. Thanks, Max, for always.
Ooh la la.
Good evening, Max. Good evening, everyone.
Thank you for being on the show. A lot of interesting discussion tonight. I know you've been living with type 1 diabetes for over 40 years. I'm curious how the gynecologist and your diabetes affected your life and what your relationship is with your gynecologist today.
Well, I was diagnosed at the age of 10, and now I'm 50, so it has affected pubescent all the way now entering the beginning stages of menopause. My first period was at 13, so I don't think that it was too late. However, during the beginning of college, I did not get my period for about a year. So they put me on, I believe it was Provera. It was progesterone, and then that helped balance it out. That was a long time ago, but I do believe it's about a year. And I struggled also, Asha, who we do live parallel lines, at the same time with my type 1 diabetes diagnosed, Hashimoto's was diagnosed. So we don't know which one caused what, but that also entered a lot of complications on the autoimmune spectrum. And then throughout my life, just PMS was always a challenge with blood sugars. And I had decided early on not to have children with my diabetes. And then now entering menopause, it has been a little challenging dealing with anemia also because of the extension of my period that went from 6 days to now only 4. So I've had, it's been a struggle and a battle, especially now with severe anemia.
Is that common, Dr. Andrea? Any of this that you're hearing from Laura?
Yes, absolutely, especially with the anemia, with the bleeding, the bleeding issues for sure. Yeah, I mean it's tough.
My insulin pump, I have to say that I've realized my patterns a few years ago on the high blood sugar, and then when I get my period, how it crashes, my blood sugar crashes, so I always have to be careful. So that has been such a great tool, I have the wireless Omnipod, in order to figure out that pattern to really help me kind of smooth things out. I have a salty craving, not a sweet craving, so that kind of has saved me as well from extreme highs and lows.
Yeah, that's the other piece that I didn't mention too, with the progesterone, because it can cause the cravings, and if you tend to having a sugar craving, that can augment the insulin resistant effect of the progesterone as well.
Yes.
You might, as you're going into the menopausal transition, you might start to notice a lack of cyclicness with that. Yes, you could sort of get to a run where you're going to be going not so much in that cyclic pattern and have a little bit more of a sustained effect of the progesterone. So you might notice that you are challenged a little bit with your insulin, your glycemic control. I don't know if
yes,
you noticed that
is.
Or not. Yeah.
I think it's replaced it with now migraines.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh, no. So, yes, and actually interesting that you spoke about, innate, generational. My mom and my maternal grandmother both had menopause early in their 40s, so I've surpassed that, and I have no clue why, especially having diabetes, which always affects everything, and, now it's stretched another decade.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, thank you so much for sharing your story as well. This is quite a show tonight. I hope people who want to ask anyone a question call into 347-215-8551. We'll be taking your questions. But right now, It's my 6th anniversary of podcasting. And I want to play some games, so I'm going to bring in my final guest of the evening. She's a friend of mine. She's helped us out so many times at Divabetic. She's been a part of our community. She helps me glam more, fearless. She's a skincare expert. She was a QVC on-air spokesperson. She's the ambassador of caring, daring, and sharing. Please welcome Peak 10 Skincare founder, Connie Elder. Hi, Connie.
Hey, Max, how are you? It's great to be here tonight.
Thanks for being on the show. You know, this is a really wonderful podcast with a lot of conversation, and you're going to help add some sparkle to that. Before we do, what were your thoughts listening to the show tonight?
Well, it's just always amazing to hear the different things that women go through, and everybody's situation in those environments are so different. One can be dealing with the same symptoms or a disease, but their symptoms are all different, and it affects them at different ages. But, you know, we all have sympathy for one another, I think, as women, because we all have certain things to go through, and they're never the same, but we have compassion for one another. And that's kind of an underlying thing that I see with women that I love.
I love it. I agree with you. I think that's wonderful. All right, so you're helping me celebrate my 6-year anniversary. You're going to give two lucky winners a night two lucky listeners a chance tonight to win some of your fabulous Peak 10 Skincare sunscreen. Tell us a little bit about Peak 10 Skincare and the products we're going to be hopefully giving away tonight.
Well, Peak 10 Skin, we just launched a couple months ago. I'm not new to skincare, as you well know. I've been in the skincare business since 2005. But the one thing that we're doing with Peak 10 Skin is high levels of active ingredients, and we're elevating the skin health and hydration. And as that relates to diabetics, it's so important for this the integrity of the skin to be intact with diabetics. And the way one can do that is by elevating the hydration, and that's so important. And one thing that I would like to mention to everyone who's listening who is a diabetic, one way that you can do that and keep your skin strong, because hydrated skin is stronger skin, is to use serums underneath your moisturizers and kind of lock in that moisture and keep your skin strong. Hydration will keep your skin strong. So that's one of the things I would like to mention. And then, Max, I know we're going to talk a little bit about sunscreen as well, since it is the season that we all know to use sunscreen, even though year-round is really when we should use sunscreen.
Great. Yes, we are going to be talking about it. So, Laura?
Yes?
We have two questions tonight. The first question, if you get it right, you will win the gift. The second question, if you get it right, our instant winner who answered the question correctly on any of our social media will win the prize. And if you get both questions right, I'm going to twist Connie's arm to give Asha Brown the gift too. So no pressure. But
and I will also then, or I will donate
really
it to Asha.
Right
I will gladly donate it.
Your first you have to choose a number from 1 to 12.
9.
Cindy Lou, if you're listening, you could be our instant winner tonight.
Yay!
I always get excited about that. Did you guys hear my voice? I was so tragic. I was just like, wow. All right, so, and I know her. So she runs a lovely type 2 diabetes community on Facebook. So Cindy Lou, if you're listening, you could be our instant winner with Laura tonight. All right, so Laura,
yay,
here's your first question. Dr. Andrea is our expert on this question. Your question features something we spoke about earlier on the podcast. What do the initials PDDM stand for, and what are some of the symptoms?
Oh, I'm caught off guard. Obviously, I don't know the medical name, sorry. That was loud.
Max.
All right. Doctor, well, you know what? Asha could probably answer this. Do you want to phone a friend with Asha? Asha, do you have the answer?
Can you repeat the letters again?
You said it backwards.
I did say it wrong?
Yeah, you said it wrong.
It was PBM.
You did dyslexia. You said PBDM.
Right.
You meant to say
PMDD. So then I thought I missed something.
Did you mean PMDD?
That's what he meant, yes.
I was like, I didn't hear this.
Sorry, I wrote it wrong. Okay.
Laura,
wait, Laura, can you answer PMDD?
Premenstrual, it's the dye, I can't even pronounce it, D-Y, so it is the premenstrual dye, oh, good Lord. Again, another scientific name, so I guess I'm out.
No,
but
well,
it was a premenstrual. But it was a premenstrual dye something. Sorry.
Dr. Andrea?
Do we want to let – am I going to be a spoiler? Should we let Asher answer so there's still a win?
Yes.
We're all
I'm
raising
game.
Awareness today. We're going to give the guest – we're going to give the guest
okay,
away
good,
anyhow.
Good. So premenstrual dysphoria disorder.
And what is it again?
Premenstrual
dysphoria.
Yeah, so premenstrual dysphoria disorder is, a hormone-mediated mood disorder, and the symptoms are, to make the diagnosis of PMDD, it's PMS. These symptoms that occur cyclically, coming on in the week or two before your period, progressively getting better during your menstrual period, having a symptom-free week or a little bit more maybe, and then having everything start all over again. So it's sort of this cloud storm coming down on you and then lifting up, and it happens in a cyclic nature, and it's because of the hormonal changes in your female hormonal changes that cause your menstrual cycle interacting with neurotransmitters in your brain.
Nice. All right. Well, thank you for that. And I screwed that up. So, Connie, we're going to have to allow for that win. I totally agree with everyone as a judge. Thank you so much for that. All right. So here's your second question. This one relates to summer skin care. Is it fact or fiction sunscreen doesn't expire?
It does expire.
Connie Elder, did she get it right or wrong?
She is absolutely correct.
Ding, ding, ding. Thank you very
That's
much.
That's so much better than this sound.
Yeah.
That is awful.
But I do
that
love
actually,
that buzzer.
That
everybody.
Actually spiked my blood sugar, that buzz.
Yeah, it does.
All right, well, let's not do that. But, Connie, tell us a little bit about this. So, do all sunscreens come with an expiration date, and how long do they normally last?
They do come with a expiration date, and usually it's around a 2-year window. And while that is accurate, if everything is perfect and normal and it is maintained in the perfect environment, that's great. But there is a chance, since sunscreen is usually used in extreme conditions, which is, really heat, you're on the boat, the sun is baking it along with you. If you're at the beach, the same is happening. Or you could be in a very cold environment. I actually live in the high country in Colorado, and so people are using sunscreen because the sun is so bright here in the mountains when people are skiing. It's just when it's in such a unstable environment, why risk it? Because the whole idea of sunscreen is to protect you. So each year I would always buy new sunscreen. The other thing that I would like to say is if you're actually using your sunscreen on a routine basis, which would be daily if you're in the sun, then you won't have to worry about it ever reaching its expiration date.
All right. So can I ask you a question? Do you have to treat your skin any special way before you apply sunscreen for it to be effective?
No. No. The main thing that you're going to want to do, truthfully, putting your sunscreen on is going to be last after you are putting on your other hydrating products, your skincare products. You may layer makeup on top of it, and many of us use foundations and things that have sunscreens in them as well, so you're actually layering the sunscreens. We actually have the one that we're giving away today is a non-aerosol spray, which is great because you can keep it in your purse and reapply it because it's a very fine mist on top of your makeup. Let's say
today
you're sitting outside, you know, at a lunch, and you end up running into another friend and you stay another hour and you're sitting out in the sun and you didn't anticipate doing that, you can pull this out of your purse, mist it on over your makeup. So those are things that we need to really pay attention to and reapply, because you can catch yourself in environments when you stay out in the sun longer than you meant to.
That's smart.
That's very smart.
And what do the SPF numbers mean? I mean, everyone says you should have at least 15. That's what they used to say like years ago. But it seems to me now that minimum number has gotten higher and higher.
Well, that's very controversial, to be honest with you. Some people think that it's overkill when you get to 50, 60, 70. It's actually about how long you can stay in the sun, but the safe thing to do is to reapply, because I think it's misleading sometimes because we think, oh, I've got 70 on, I can go all day. But were you sweating? Were you in the water? You know, did you wipe your face, you know, with a towel? There's so many things that come into play that I would say you need to use, you know, something around a 30, and just be conscientious about reapplying. That's the main thing. And the one thing that I would like to point out is, while this is the time of year we all think about sunscreen because you're doing more outdoor activities or you're on vacation, but in reality, there's routine things that we do like driving. And if you drive long distances to work, think about where your hands are when they're at the 10 and 2 on the steering wheel. The back of your hand is baking every day. So it's so nice to put on the little, you know, mist, the spray, or keep a small sunscreen in your car. And the other part of your body that we all neglect is our neck, and that is getting sun exposure through your car windshield all the time as well. So most of us use sunscreen on our face, and we use all these wonderful creams on our face for anti-aging, but we forget about protecting our neck and our hands from the sun. So anti-aging is a great reason to use it, or just slowing down the aging process or the symptoms of that. But in reality, you know, it's about skin cancer. It's about protecting ourselves, and we forget about the backs of our hands and our necks.
No, great advice. And we should tell everyone that they could all be lucky winners, because you're giving us a special discount on Peak 10 skincare for the Diva-Beta community. Tell everyone a little bit about that.
Yes, we really support anyone who has a health issue that, you know, they have to deal with all the time. So what we want to do is be able to give you a discount that makes it be more affordable for you to have great products to protect yourself, to keep your skin integrity in place by hydrating it, and then in the sunscreen area just to keep yourself protected. And so we are offering 30% off. It's not for a limited time. It's ongoing. And it's Diva-Betics, Divabetic, all lowercase and together. If you use
Perfect.
That coupon code on our website, you'll get 30% off.
I love it. All right, so Liz, it's our 6th anniversary podcast. We have an extra 15 minutes on the show. When we come back after we listen to this PM Dawn song, Compliments of Sony Music, I'm going to put all four women in the hot seat and ask them a burning question I have for them. Get ready. You're listening to Mr. Diva-Betic's show, Divey's Late Night. Hey, it's Mr. Diva-Betic. You're halfway through our show. We've got great music by PM Dawn tonight, courtesy of Sony Music. Plus, I have four fabulous guests: Dr. Andrea Chisholm, Asha Brown, the founder of We Are Diabetes, Connie Elder, the founder of Peak 10 Skincare, and Laura Laria, who is a co-creator of the Well-Armed Diabetic Checklist. Laura, you're the first one in the Mr. Diva-Betic hot seat.
Oh, great.
What is on the well-armed diabetic checklist that every person with diabetes should have in case of a danger, crisis, fire, evacuation, or natural disaster?
Oh, there's a long list, but it includes perishable and non-perishable and some medical supplies. It could run from glucose tablets, your own diabetes, management supplies, injections, pills. We also have now bleach tablets, masks, extra batteries for your meters. In a Ziploc, make copies of all of your pertinent information, such as your ID, your insurance card, extra set of your keys for home and car, extra change, money, water, T-shirt, flip-flops, sunscreen. That's just a few.
Great job. Thank you for sharing that. And you can get more information on that. Where can they get more information on the Well-Armed Diabetic Checklist?
You can email me at wellarmeddiabetic@aol.com, and it's 1D, so we combine the Well-Armed Diabetic, so it spells WELLDIABET, Well-Armed, so it's 1D. And at AOL.com, I can send free copies. I've sent them to some of your groups, Max, also free of charge. And you can always just email and ask us also.
Send me the info, and we'll post it on DivaBetic's community pages tomorrow. Okay,
absolutely.
Connie Elder, the founder of Peak 10 Skincare, you're in the hot seat.
Uh-oh.
You've had an amazing life as an entrepreneur. You've been featured in O Magazine, on the Oprah Winfrey Show, and Dr. Oz. A lot of the women in the diabetic community have dreams of being an entrepreneur. What are three tips you could give anyone who wants to create their own business and find happiness like you have?
I would say first to follow your dream and actually do something about it rather than just thinking about it. Start to take action. Don't give up once you get started, because there's always going to be obstacles in the road. And know that it's never an easy route, but the rewards are worth it.
What do you think of Shark Tank?
I think that it's an incredible show. I think that the QVC aspect of it is very real. I've watched lots of people be very successful. And then I've seen others that have one shot and then it goes away. Some of that's about understanding the dynamic of having your own business and all the components that go with it from a manufacturing standpoint, or actually sometimes growing too fast can be your detriment. So it's an interesting show. If you're someone who has watched it over the years, then you've seen a lot of different types of products, and you've seen some continue to be successful and some that fall off the radar.
Yeah, I love watching that show, I have to say. Thank you
for
that. I think you're fascinating. You're such an inspiration to women who want to get in business and have their own business. And people should definitely check you out, Connie Elder, at Peak 10 Skincare. Asha Brown, you're the founder of We Are Diabetes Organization.
Yes, I am.
You're in the hot seat. I love this. I feel like I'm playing Mastermind on TV. There's a lot of controversy around how the media discusses diabulimia. What is that term, and how do you think the media could be more responsible in its coverage of this eating disorder related to diabetes?
Oh, Max, I could talk about that for 2 hours straight. I'll break it down quickly. So the word diabulimia is a media coined term. It is not a medical term. And unfortunately, it is only one type of an eating disorder that a type 1 diabetic can suffer from. It really is more on the concept of a type 1 diabetic omitting their insulin as a form of bulimia, of purging the excess calories that they might be taking in through binging. Or maybe they're not binging. Maybe they're eating normally, but they're restricting their insulin to lose weight through urinating frequently. So diabulimia is it's just a catchphrase of the last few years. And most people I know who struggle with type 1 diabetes and a co-occurring eating disorder are not fond of the term, because everyone has a unique section of struggles. And I work many, I'd say half of my clients at least have a different type of eating disorder, and they do not omit their insulin. Their A1C is actually quite good, but they may have a different type of an eating disorder.
Nice job. Thank you so much for that. We should tell people they could go to wearediabetes.org to find more about it and also follow
Absolutely.
You on Facebook and learn more about the support and the coaching you offer as well as your team in who are, for people who are dealing with that issue. Dr. Andrea Chisholm,
yes,
you're
Max.
Back. You're in the hot seat.
Okay.
Okay, you have a couple questions, unfortunately, but that could be good or bad. What is a natural odor a woman can experience?
Can you repeat that? It was a natural odor?
What's
that
a natural odor? You know, a lot of questions I got on Facebook were all about what is it normal for me to have an odor, I guess, in my vagina? Is it,
okay.
You know, and what would that spectrum of odor be?
Okay, so the spectrum of odor can be what would be the spectrum of a normal body odor. The key is really if it's not really a foul odor. And that can be a little bit subjective for some women. But a good sort of starting point for that is the typical sort of bacterial imbalance that women can get that's not a yeast infection, it's sort of the opposite of it, is caused by anaerobic bacteria. So this particular bacteria called Gardnerella vaginalis. And that particular type of bacteria, when it's metabolized, releases amines. And amines basically smell like fish, basically smell like kind of like a rotten fish smell. So if you have that sort of a fishy discharge odor that you're noticing, I think a key too is if you're noticing the odor, then it may be something that's not a quote-unquote normal odor. If you're not noticing it, then it's probably of your own body and what is normal.
And are douche is what you use if you're
noticing? Oh, bad. Never, ever.
Summer
Big
Eve
acting
is out
through
the
douching.
Window.
Douching is just is no longer is not recommended. It is really it's a very unhealthy thing to do. The vagina, I like to sort of think of the vagina, it's self-cleaning. You know, the vagina takes care of itself with the healthy bacteria that are in there, the lactobacilli. Douching kind of kills off all that healthy bacteria and just opens you up to these imbalances. The best thing to do is if you think you have a vaginal what we would call a vaginitis or a vaginal bacterial imbalance, if you're having something that's problematic vaginally, you really should see your gynecologist and get evaluated. Do you have a yeast infection? Do you have bacterial vaginosis? Do you have potentially have another STD? Are you low on your lactobacilli? Do you need to take some supplements and get that straightened out, and then your body will take care of itself. But douching is just bad because it imbalances the bacteria in your vagina. And if you do have a bacterial imbalance, the douching can introduce that bacteria up into your upper genital tract and up into the uterus and into your fallopian tubes and potentially increase your risk of developing pelvic inflammatory disease. So bad, no douching.
Well, and that was good advice, that you shouldn't be embarrassed about that. You should be willing to go to your gynecologist and talk about that, because I do think that odor, most people would be a little bit embarrassed about it, and I really appreciate your answer tonight. And I hope people who are listening hear how friendly you are and know that they could go to their gynecologist with questions like that and get answers. So your final question, Dr. Andrea, we're looking at the pages of People magazine. Gwyneth Paltrow had her vagina steamed. What is that, and why would we choose to do it?
She had her vagina. What did she have done? She had her vagina steamed?
Steam cleaned, I think. Like I would have my carpets, I guess. I don't know. She said she had a vagina steaming.
I meant to learn what that was.
Has anyone ever come in and requested?
I read something about this. Go ahead.
Yeah, no. Go ahead.
I read this article that there's a new, it's a kind of a holistic thing, and you put different twigs and herbs and stuff in a hot, you know, pot of water, and then you get a little squat chair and you just sit over it. you stood over the steaming pot. Like, you know when you have a sinus infection and you steam your face
over
the pot?
You put Vicks in it.
Yeah, okay, so here, I'm looking at this now. I'm looking at it. I'm doing my, you know, usual medical research here on Google. So I've Googled vaginal steaming.
And I'm doing visual imagery, so I don't know.
You know, I could potentially... now the thing is any time something's been around Chinese medicine wise and things have been around this long, I do think there is some worth in looking at it, right? Because these things wouldn't have been around for so long if they didn't hold some potential preventative medicinal quality to them. Now the thing that's interesting to me is that the vagina is a mucous membrane. It's all a mucous membrane, just like the inside of your mouth is a mucous membrane. And mucous membranes are some of the most permeable, I'm sure we can talk to this, is some of the most permeable, meaning that things pass through it very easily. So, you know, just if you're steaming, like for your nose, the nose is a mucous membrane. You bring the herbal, the eucalyptus or whatever you're using to sort of decongest and absorb through that mucous membrane. I can see how potentially what's happening here is that these medicinal Chinese herbs are actually kind of going into your bloodstream via your vaginal mucous membrane. That's
so
how I could add some science to that.
So you're thinking it potentially could be beneficial?
I can't comment with any sort of scientific evidence behind it, but I could just you know, say on the one hand, I mean, we do know that there are some medicinal benefits from Chinese herbal medications in teas and in aerosolized things. So perhaps I could say maybe this is just another route of administration.
Okay. And Connie Elder, you're from the beauty industry. I mean, apparently Gwyneth Paltrow did go to a spa. Have you ever seen this listed on any of those swanky spas out in Colorado?
Not yet.
Well, then they keep it private. Who knows?
Exactly. It may be coming, though.
That was the best answer. I love it. Okay. Hey, oh, my gosh, I'm being put in the hot seat. I can't even speak anymore. Here's a question from someone from Facebook. Max, did you have a good time going to the gynecologist? Of course I did. I love going to the gynecologist. Look who I met in the waiting room tonight. Actually, I feel like I have to thank Dr. Andrea for always being, I said it before throughout the podcast, you're so friendly and upbeat. I feel like I could ask you any question. And I hope people who are listening take that with them when they go to see their gynecologist, especially if they have something that's embarrassing or confusing, like Asha explained her diagnosis, and find someone like you that could really help hold their hand and lead them through that. And Asha, thank you for being such an incredible advocate and showing everyone through your life story about how important it is to be your own healthcare advocate and to stand up for yourself, even when in the storm, when everyone seems crazy out there and isn't listening, that you actually tonight, I think people hearing your story heard how you stood up, and now you're in a much better place because of it. So I hope people
Absolutely.
Listening to Asha raise their voice and also check out her website. Laura, I have to thank you because you kind of succinctly told the story of my period through living with diabetes. And as long as I've done Divabetic, this whole issue around menstruation and diabetes and menopause and diabetes and everything else has so many women confused. They don't have any information on it. They don't know who to talk about it. And the way you talked about your journey for the last 40 years and kind of went through your menstrual cycle as well as your diabetes and made that connection, I think a lot of women are going to hear that and be comforted and think they're no longer alone, which was the goal of this podcast. And Connie Elder, I just thank you for always helping me glam more, fear less, and making it fun to go to the gynecologist and giving great products and services to our community. And also, on a side note, thank you so much for raising awareness around domestic violence for women and men. I just appreciate that so much because that's another subject that's close to my heart. So all the thank yous to all my guests, and of course I want to thank my listeners tonight for tuning in. Please subscribe to the Divabetic e-newsletter at divabetic.org. Visit Divabetic Facebook pages because we're going to be posting the Well-Armed Diabetic Checklist. And check out my videos on Mr. Divabetic's YouTube channel. I'm actually going to be putting on the fruit suit and going to a couple outdoor what are they called? I can't even think of the word. Farm markets later this summer. And join us next month for Diabetes Late Night in August. We're going to be talking about anger issues related to diabetes. That's Tuesday, August 9th. Until then, remember, every dude and every diva has an entourage, and I'm so glad to be part of yours. Let's get happy and stay healthy together. We're going to close this podcast by playing that big hit by PM Dawn one more time, and hopefully when you hear it, you'll take a minute to keep your house a home and protect your family from a diabetes health-related complication.
Just a memory slips through you.